This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For over a decade, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring independent third-party research on a broad range of public management topics, and issues important to public managers. On his first full day in office, January 21st, 2009, President Obama issued a call for increased openness in government. Subsequently, on December 8th, 2009, the White House issued the federal government's Open Government Directive that emphasized three principles of open government: transparency, participation, and collaboration. The Open Government Directive called upon each federal agency to formulate a plan for how it intended to increase openness and public engagement in its programs and operations. Today, we will explore a roadmap that federal agencies may follow while implementing their open government efforts. We will focus on such questions as, what is open government? How has the Open Government Directive sought to change the way government does business? How has advances in technology made open government more of a reality? We will discuss these questions and more with Professors Kwan Ho Lee and Yong-Hoon Kwok, authors of the recent IBM Center report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increased Public Engagement. Professors, this report comes out on the heels of the first anniversary of the Open Government Directive, which was issued in December of 2009. Would you tell us more about the three principles that framed the Open Government Directive and some of the core requirements federal agencies have to follow to achieve the goal of creating more open government?
Well, the Open Government Directive clearly states that the three principles of transparency, participation, and collaboration form the cornerstone of an open government. The transparency promotes accountability by providing the public with information and data about what the government is doing and how it is performing. On the other hand, participation allows members of the public to contribute their ideas and experience and expertise so that government can make informed and reliable decisions and policies. Collaboration improves the effectiveness of government by encouraging partnerships and cooperation between and across the government, as well as between the government and private institutions. So in order to pursue these three principles of transparency, participation, and collaboration, federal agencies are required to do the following. Number one, publishing government data online. Two, improving the data of their government data. And three, creating and institutionalizing a culture of open government, because culture is a big thing. And finally, number four, creating an enabling policy framework for open government.
That's wonderful. Now, the use of social media has grown exponentially over the last few years. To provide some context, would you briefly outline for us some of the higher points of this growth?
Yeah, well, it has been truly amazing and mind-boggling to watch how social media took off and exploded for the last several years. You know, for instance, Facebook was founded in 2004, and it now has more than 500 million users with a $50 billion valuation. So that's about $100 value per user. So that's pretty amazing. And about 300,000 new users are joining Twitter every and each and every day. And 2 billion YouTube videos are viewed every day. And Wikipedia, which is online Encyclopedia has published over 9 million articles in 250 different languages. 5 billion photos have been uploaded on Flickr. So all in all, social media has been spreading like wildfire.
And given your research, how are organizations in the public and private sectors leveraging social media to transform the way they work, collaborate, and or innovate?
Well, social media has really enabled new forms of collaboration with not only with your colleagues, but also with people previously unacquainted with one another. So I came across many fascinating stories and cases almost every day about how organizations use the social media to do something they were never able to do before. For example, take Starbucks as an example. When Howard Schultz returned to Starbucks as CEO in January 2008, one of the first things he did to try to turn around the company was launching a website called mystarbucksidea.com. So it is an ideation platform where customers come in and submit their ideas to improve and innovate Starbucks products and services. So to date, I found that customers have submitted about 100,000 ideas and suggestions to the website. And actually, Starbucks implemented a number of these ideas for their benefit. So similarly, Lego and Procter & Gamble and BMW and many other organizations have leveraged the social media to innovate their products by collaborating with not only with their employees, but also with customers. Another example might be the Whole Foods Market. They leverage Twitter to get connected with its 1.8 million online customers. Comcast has radically improved their customer services using Twitter as well. So many similar applications can be found in the public sector. As of July 2010, 22 out of 24 major federal agencies have a presence on all three of Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. So using these social media tools, these agencies keep the public informed and engage them in various governing processes. So I believe that social media will play a big role in realizing the vision of the Open Government Directive.
Now, Professor Lee, Professor Kwok, the social media has meant a lot of things to a lot of folks in terms of what exactly it is. And it can be classified, I understand from your report, into two different groups depending on its main purpose. Would you describe those two types of social media?
Yeah, sure. There are different ways to classify social media. We have classified it into two different groups, expressive social media and collaborative social media. When we say expressive social media, it allows people to express and share among themselves text, pictures, videos, music, and any other digital data. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube are some of the examples of this type of social media. When you say about collaborative social media, that enables people to work together to achieve common goals. Wikis or Google Docs are examples of this type of social media.
I'd like to learn a little bit more about you both. Professor Kwok Lee, would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I want to speak firstly about my research interest, if that's okay. Well, I have two streams of research that I'm working on. The first stream of research is about software development processes. So I'm particularly interested in understanding the complex environment in which software teams develop and implement their system development work. So if you think about the environment, we are talking about global teams, globally geographically distributed teams. And also, increasingly more and more components are going into information systems. And then information systems tend to get intertwined with business processes and suppliers and supply chain. The whole thing gets, you know, involved in information system development. So I'm looking at how software teams can manage this complexity of the environment, the technological environment and business environment, and then being able to respond to changing user requirements. Because as you know, if you have a 6 month, 9 months projects going on, chances are your user requirements or system requirements will change as well. So how do you go about responding to user requirement changes and then being able to, you know, to deliver what you promised to deliver at the end of the day? So that's my first research stream. And then my second research stream has to do with social media, open government, and open innovation. So I've been looking at the private sector's the effort to leverage social media to bring their customers and their employees together to improve their innovation, to move forward. And also, as shown in our IBM report here, I've been looking at the how government sector and the public sector generally use and leverage social media to transform the way they do their business with the citizens and public.
Professor Kwok?
Yes. My primary research and interest and my teaching area is basically project management and project control. So that's my primary interest of field. So I actually teach project management or project management related courses at the George Washington University School of Business. This report is my second report. I have another report that has been published called Project Management in Government: Introduction to On Value Management. So that's my primary interest. But I also are interested in other fields such as technology management, which I think is related, as well as continuous improvement practices. So this particular model, the government implementation model, it's more of a continuous improvement process. So that's where this model also comes from.
What is the open government implementation model? We will explore this and more when this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. How can government cut costs and improve performance? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? How is the Navy strengthening its information dominance for the 21st century? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint and green its operations? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guests today are Professors Kwon-Ho Lee and Yong-Hoon Kwok, authors of the recent IBM Center report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increase Public Engagement. Professors, to date, little research has been done to investigate critical issues associated with open government. Your report proposes the open government implementation model for guiding government agencies through their journey to open government. Would you elaborate on this model, defining its four stages of implementation? And what is the thesis of this implementation model?
Yes, thank you. This is one of the first model that you'll ever see related to open government implementation. We are proposing four-stage open government implementation model to guide government agencies their journey to open government. The stage starts from increasing data transparency, which is stage one, and then moving on to improving open participation, which is stage two. Then enhancing open collaboration, which is stage three. And finally, realizing ubiquitous engagement, which is stage four. Each of the implementation stages contains the focuses, deliverables, benefits, challenges, best practices, and metrics in detail. You mentioned about the thesis. A thesis of the open government implementation model is that government agencies should advance their open government initiatives in a progressive and orderly manner. This could, in fact, be achieved by focusing on one implementation stage at a time, starting from stage one, and incrementally climbing up to the next stage, up to stage four.
So, Professor Kwok, why is it critical that agencies follow the sequence of the model you've proposed?
Well, we do believe that there is a need for a logical sequence when advancing open government initiative. By following the sequence in our model, government agencies can effectively and completely harness the power of social media to engage the public. Our observations of several government agencies' open government initiatives suggest that the simultaneous or random implementation of multiple stages in fact causes many problems and challenges. These problems include or related to resources, budget, time, technology, cultural change, adoption by the public, and others. Therefore, by focusing on one implementation stage at a time, starting from stage one, the government agencies can effectively build infrastructure and capabilities for open government. This so-called stage approach will minimize the impact to government employees and to the public.
Professors, would you tell me more about the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services dashboard? What are some of the capabilities, outcomes, and challenges related to this effort? And to what extent does it reflect stage one in your implementation model?
Well, stage one focuses on publishing relevant data online and sharing it with the public. It is, in fact, relatively easy and, in fact, quick to achieve. There are two important tasks at this stage. One is identifying high-value, high-impact data for the public. And then the other is improving and assuring data quality in terms of accuracy, consistency, and timeliness. To elaborate the first point of identifying high-value, high-impact data, we believe that as a general rule of thumb, government agencies should focus on the top 20% of their data that would most benefit the public. To do so, a process and a governance structure should be in place to select the high-impact data. To elaborate on the second point related to improving and assuring data quality, we believe that it is very important that agencies assure the quality of data that will be open to the public, because the low-quality data often misinform and or mislead the public about government work and its performance. Accurate and up-to-date data is crucial for public participation and collaboration.
Stage two of the Open Government Implementation Model focuses on improving open participation for the public in government work and decision-making. I'd like to get a sense of what the benefits are for increased open participation that you've outlined in your report, and to what extent do agencies at stage two gain momentum to nurture the open government culture and practice?
Well, open participation enhances policy decisions and government services by welcoming and utilizing the input of the public. And contrary to the more conventional feedback methods such as surveys and questionnaires and focus groups, social media allows the public to engage in more informal, spontaneous, and conversational interactions with government. So with increased open participation, agencies may be able to crowdsource the public's ideas, knowledge, expertise, and experience through voting, polling, contests, blogging, microblogging, and idea sharing. So this type of collective intelligence based upon a large number of individuals from diverse backgrounds really helps government agencies to make informed and reliable decisions. Open participation will enable the public to provide diverse feedback to agencies and reduce time and cost for innovation and increase the public's sense of community, if you will, with government agencies. But one caveat is that the agencies need to be able to respond to the public's feedback in a timely and consistent manner, because this is very critical. And this capability would require agencies to put in place formal processes, coordination mechanisms, and dedicated government employees.
So once government agencies increase data transparency and open participation, the next step, according to your report and what we've seen, is to foster open collaboration among government agencies, the public, and the private sector. What's the difference between open participation and open collaboration?
Well, we found that some federal agencies use open participation and open collaboration almost interchangeably and do not clearly distinguish between them in their open government plans, for instance. However, we believe that it is very helpful to differentiate between the two, as they require different types of technological and organizational capabilities, and also they produce different types of outputs. So open participation refers to public engagement in relatively simple interactive communications, such as blogging, microblogging, social networking, and bookmarking, tagging, and photo and video sharing, and idea sharing, and so on. It relies primarily on what we call expressive social media to connect with people and share their ideas. On the other hand, open collaboration refers to public engagement in more complex tasks and projects that aim to produce specific outputs. For example, group writing and editing of documents and wiki application development, open source software development and organizing events in response to national emergencies or natural disasters. These are type of things that require open collaboration. So collaboration relies on collaborative social media, such as wikis and Google Docs and Jive social business software. And one more thing, when it comes to open collaboration, we found that some federal agencies focus mostly on interagency collaboration more than anything else. However, we would argue that in order to fully realize the power of mass collaboration, open collaboration should go beyond interagency collaboration and include the public and private sector as well.
Well, as we were putting together and looking at your report, I was pleased by how clear it was in terms of the stages. And with all the work that's going on in the federal space around this particular topic, I really think that your implementation model allows folks to get a sense of where certain agencies are. And in building up on stages 1 to 3, agencies in stage 4, which is the last part of your implementation model, take transparency, participation, and collaboration to the next level of public engagement. Agencies at stage 4 strive to achieve 2 important goals. Would you elaborate on those goals?
Sure. At stage 4, first of all, agencies make public engagement platforms and programs more easier to use and more accessible, primarily through mobile and ubiquitous computing devices and applications. So the public would use smartphones and tablets, desktops, laptops, you name it, even gaming devices to access public engagement services. Government websites and applications will be optimized for various different types of computing platforms. So that's the first goal of stage 4. And secondly, public engagement methods, tools, and services will be seamlessly integrated within and across government agencies so that the public can easily navigate and engage in various types of government processes and activities without having to jump around different applications or keep logging in and out. Furthermore, at stage 4, the government agencies, the public, the private sector, and other stakeholders will form and nurture a sustainable ecosystem and a virtuous cycle for effective public engagement.
Now, your report and your research identifies and offers a model, but it does also do something I think is very important, because with all these efforts on open government, how do you know you're actually achieving what you're supposed to be achieving? What's your effectiveness measure? So I want to ask, because I think your report does a very good job of laying this out, how are agencies measuring the effectiveness of their open government efforts? And more particularly, what's the difference between the use of process quantity metrics and outcome impact metrics in evaluating the success of these programs?
So those are very important questions to address. But we have not yet come across federal managers who are extremely satisfied with their current metrics for evaluating open government and public engagement performance. Well, metrics, as you know, are essential for pursuing open government initiatives. However, many existing metrics tend to measure process or quantity rather than outcome or impact. Process or quantity-centric metrics focus on measuring quantitative performance of public engagement processes. Some examples of this type of metrics are number of data sets published, for instance, or number of data downloads, or number of visitors, number of unique visitors, number of repeat visitors, and number of messages posted, and so on. But on the other hand, outcome or impact-centric metrics focus on measuring the business value of public engagement, both quantitatively and qualitatively. Some examples in this type of metrics are time and cost savings, quality and innovativeness of engagement outcomes, and user satisfaction. In the early stages of open government implementation, we recommend that agencies start with metrics that can objectively measure process performance, first, because these metrics can be readily, easily obtained. In later stages, however, agencies should start measuring outcome and impact, because that's what matters at the end of the day.
Professors Lee Kwok, why did you choose this area of open government to research for the IBM Center?
Well, I can start first. First of all, this new administration really puts emphasis on the open government initiative. So I thought that was very important. And then the whole new technology advancement, evolution, social media, this really triggers a great interest in how this could be applied and implemented to the open government initiative. So that's why we selected. I'm sure that Professor Lee could talk more about
sure.
it.
Sure. Well, I've been looking at how social media can transform not only the public sector, but also the private sector, commercial organizations for some time. And then a lot of people think that government is always or sometimes or often behind commercial organizations. But as I look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. and federal space, it was fascinating to see that with the determination coming from the White House and also from the top, and also the federal agency's response to those, the directive of open government. Actually, a lot of interesting things are happening in Washington, D.C. in federal space. And then I would say there is a lot more than you think that commercial organizations can learn from federal agencies. So I thought it might be worthwhile looking at what it takes to realize the vision of open government, and then see what's happening, and then take the lessons from it, and then share it with not only with the federal agencies but also with commercial organizations.
How are federal agencies pursuing open government initiatives? We will focus on one particular agency, the Department of Health and Human Services, when this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. How is the federal government leveraging award prizes to spur innovation and solve tough problems? Pick up the latest Center report, Managing Innovation Prizes in Government, and find out. Drawing on such successful efforts like the Lunar Lander Challenge and DARPA's Grand Urban Challenges, this report offers practical insights and recommendations for the design, implementation, and evaluation of innovation prizes in government. You can order or download a free copy of Managing Innovation Prizes in Government and all Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Telework has been touted as a winning strategy for government. In fact, a study by the Telework Research Network claims potential savings of nearly $3.8 billion. In a recent IBM Center report, Implementing Telework, Lessons Learned for Four Federal Agencies, Professor Scott Obermeyer presents case studies of federal agencies who have successfully implemented telework in their organizations. You can order or download a free copy of this and all Center reports at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guests today are Professors Kwon-Ho Lee and Yong-Hoon Kwok, authors of the recent IBM Center report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increase Public Engagement. Professor Lee, in the last segment, you teed this up perfectly where you mentioned your interest in why you both chose to research the Open Government Initiative, Open Government Directives, in that the federal government's a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of what maybe private sector can even learn. So let's go into the case studies. You have five case studies that you present in your paper, in your report for the IBM Center, that really focus in on the Department of Health and Human Services and what's going on over there. Would you identify these cases and tell us more about why you chose those particular ones?
Yeah, sure. Just want to let you know to the audience that many federal agencies, they are doing a great job in trying to implement this open government initiative. But we particularly selected the Department of Health and Human Services because that department has emerged as one of the leading federal agencies in implementing the open government directive. Within the Health and Human Services, we have identified several cases, and these include Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Dashboard, Food and Drug Administration's Transparency Initiative, open government portal of the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Community Health Data Initiative by the Department of Health and Human Services and Institute of Medicine. The main objectives of presenting these cases are to analyze real-world open government initiatives from the open government implementation models perspective that we have proposed. These case studies also help us better identify key capabilities, deliverables, outcomes, opportunities, challenges, and issues for open government implementation.
Great. Now, I want to dive into a couple of these particular case studies and get our audience a sense of what you found in each one. And Professor Lee, would you tell us more about the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services Dashboard? What are some of the capabilities, outcomes, and challenges related to this effort? And more particularly, bringing back your model, how does that effort reflect stage one in your model?
Well, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, or CMS for short, manage extensive data associated with Medicare services. In the past, much of this data was available to the public in the form of scattered hard copies or electronic copies. So the public could not analyze the data with ease because of this inconvenience. Furthermore, the publication time lag of this data was up to 18 months. So as you can imagine, Medicare data traditionally has not been highly utilized by the public. The CMS dashboard came along and got launched in April 2010, and its main objective is to allow the public to visualize and analyze Medicare spending with ease and transparency. The current dashboard allows the public to track Medicare inpatient hospital spending from 2006 to the present, organized by state, by top 25 diagnosis-related groups, and by the top 10 hospitals for each state. Furthermore, the public can see how much Medicare is spending to support important public policy goals. For example, the provision of medical education and additional payment to rural hospitals and so on. Data is presented in both table and graph form so the public can easily visualize and analyze the data. Well, the data publication time lag has been reduced from 18 months to less than 3 months, which is a major improvement for the agency. And then the dashboard provides citizens and researchers, policymakers, and healthcare providers with important information about Medicare services, which will generate great insights for improving the healthcare performance and systems. Because the main objective of this initiative is to make government-owned data more accessible and transparent and shared across different sectors, it reflects stage one in our implementation model. One challenge for this initiative was related to budgeting. To deploy the dashboard as quickly as possible, CMS could not afford to go through a full budgeting cycle, which is 18 months. They instead found a workaround to fund the project. Another challenge has to do with timely update of data. As I mentioned earlier, the data publication lag time has been reduced from 18 to 3 months, but the question is, how would they maintain or further shorten that lag time going forward? So CMS needs to address this issue.
Great. So I want to talk about another particular case study that you offered, which reflects stage two. Would you tell us more about HHS Open Government Portal? What are some of the capabilities, outcomes, and challenges related to this effort? And again, how does it reflect stage two of your model?
Yeah, sure. HHS launched its Open Government Portal in February 2010, which is about 1 year ago. The website provides links to nearly all of their important open government resources. These resources include data sets, tools, and online discussion forums, among others. One online forum allows, for example, the public to submit their comments and suggestions on the HHS Open Government Plan and rate their contents on a 5-star scale. Another online forum, which is named the Open HHS Blog, is hosted by the agency's Chief Technology Officer, and it enables public engagement in ongoing conversations with CTO. Since the portal strives to actively engage in the public in feedback, comments, suggestions, and discussion, I think it falls under stage two of the implementation model. One challenge, though, for this portal is how to respond to public comments in a timely and consistent manner. As of now, the real-time interaction between the public and the agency is not yet possible, as public comments have to go through the agency's review process before they are posted.
So would you tell us more about another case study that you outline in your report? It's the Community Health Data Initiative, which is a collaboration between HHS and the Institute of Medicine. What are some of the capabilities, outcomes, and challenges related to this effort? And again, more particularly, how does this effort reflect stage three of your model?
Well, HHS and the Institute of Medicine have launched a very ambitious national initiative named the Community Health Data Initiative to help citizens and communities derive more value out of their health-related data. And this is a major, major public-private effort that aims to help the public understand healthcare performance in their communities and to facilitate action to improve performance. This initiative will create a network of healthcare data suppliers and data appliers so that data can be used to create applications to raise public's awareness of community health performance, as well as increase pressure on decision makers and policy makers and facilitate action to improve performance. So this initiative will include several collaborative applications. For example, interactive health maps will help the public compare health performance in their geographic area with other areas. Another example is social networking applications will allow health improvement leaders to connect with one another and compare performance and share their best practices. And finally, new value-added service will be created by integrating community health-related data. As this initiative is working to leverage not only the power of transparency and participation, but also the power of collaboration, we think that this falls under stage three of implementation model. One important challenge I'd like to point out here is that creating an effective collaborative community of federal agencies and citizens and commercial organizations and sustaining their engagement over time is a critical issue.
So when I had the pleasure to review your report and work with you on it, I noticed that there were no case studies that illustrated stage four of your models. And can you tell us why?
Yes, so actually we were looking for that questions that you're asking right now. But just to briefly go over at stage what stage four is. The stage four is public engagement becomes easy and accessible through different mobile and computing devices and applications. So that means that the social media applications are optimized for various computing platforms. That means that at stage four, different public engagement methods, tools, and services are fully integrated within and across government agencies. As a result, public can easily navigate and engage in various activities effortlessly and seamlessly. I mean, we would like to call this stage four a open government nirvana, which in short, we have not seen any agencies that reach to stage four yet. But hopefully in the future, it might happen.
What are some of the key challenges and recommendations for federal agencies pursuing open government initiatives? We will explore this and find out when we return to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. The Open Government Directive called upon each federal agency to formulate a plan for how it intended to increase openness and public engagement in its programs and operations. The latest Senate report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increase Public Engagement, provides a roadmap federal agencies can use to guide their efforts. You can order or download a free copy of this and all Senate reports at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. From contaminated peanut butter to spinach, our food safety net has shown signs of fraying, with tainted products slipping through to retail shelves, causing human harm and economic ruin. Pick up the latest Senate report on food safety and find out how critical private-public partnerships are enhancing the current food safety system in America. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our reports at businessofgovernment.org. The U.S. workplace is undergoing a significant transition that presents uncharted territory and tremendous opportunity. The latest Center report, Engaging a Multigenerational Workforce, Practical Advice for Government Managers, examines six trends now occurring in the workplace and describes how leaders can successfully manage through these trends and their challenges. These are the challenges of leading a multigenerational workforce and is increasingly driven by rapid technological changes that have changed the nature of work and how it gets done. You can order or download a free copy of this report and all Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guests today are Professors Kwan-ho Lee and Yong-hoon Kwok, authors of the recent IBM Center report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increase Public Engagement. So, professors, we've provided some context around open government, the directive and what have you. We've outlined the implementation model that you have proffered in your report, and we actually delved into some of the case studies in the Department of Health and Human Services, what's happening out there. And I want to understand, and I think our audience would like to understand, some of the key organizational challenges that you found in your research. Could you elaborate on some of the key organizational challenges, Professor Kwok?
Yeah, sure. We have identified basically six organizational challenges. There are many more, but we were able to narrow it down to six challenges. The first challenge has to do with federal budget cycle and lack of resources. And I think we mentioned that in the case studies of the Center for Medicaid and Medicare example, that the current government budgeting cycle is about 18 months, which is often too long to fund open government initiatives effectively, because that require quick decisions and actions. As a result, government agencies lack the financial and human resources required to implement these issues and initiatives, so that could be a huge challenge. The second challenge that we have identified is changing organizational culture. This is actually very important, because the successful implementation of open government initiatives will be difficult to achieve without having openness and transparent culture. So we need to really think from a different perspective, different ways when we try to engage in the open government initiative. The third challenge is ensuring the quality of data. This is also very important because, as Manny says, that it's oftentimes garbage in, garbage out. So as you have discussed it earlier, this is particularly important at stage one when the government agencies try to actually start engaging in the open government initiative. Without the good quality of data, the communication and collaboration will not work as we think. The fourth challenge is increasing public interest and engagement. To make this public engagement sustainable in the long run, agencies should need to create a virtuous cycle of continuous feedback and improvement. The whole idea of the open government implementation model itself is based on, based on a continuous improvement one stage at a time. So this thing is also a challenge. The fifth challenge is balancing autonomy and control. Agencies should monitor public input and take effective measures to mitigate any potential risk, because it is critical to keep the right balance between control and autonomy in the public when we do a public engagement. And finally, and the sixth challenge is ensuring accountability and responsibility in open collaboration. Both government agencies and the public should be accountable and responsible for their actions when they engage in open collaboration. This is, I think, critical. It's based on trust. And once that trust has been built, then we can truly experience the open government world, I would say, or society.
So those are wonderful and all-encompassing organizational challenges you've outlined. And I want to talk about some of the things around technology. What are some of the key technology challenges that certain agencies are encountering?
Again, there are many technology challenges that we could think of, but we were able to identify into three technology challenges. The first challenge is improving information technology infrastructure, because some agencies may not be ready to deploy social media application because their network infrastructure cannot support the required format or speed or others. Lack of having technology infrastructure can be a roadblock to public government engagement in the digital world. The second challenge is enhancing privacy and information security. For certain social media applications and initiatives, information security and privacy issues are major issues because risk can easily outweigh potential benefits. Therefore, public and government should try to enhance privacy, information security, using trusted sites, or other possible measures. Finally, the third challenge is integrating open government tools and applications. As agencies expand their portfolios of public engagement tools toward increasingly ubiquitous mobile devices, the seamless integration of these applications becomes critical for the user's engagement experiences.
So we've gone over some organizational challenges your report identifies and some of the key technology challenges your report identifies that federal agencies are encountering in fulfilling the requirements of the Open Government Directive. And it is a government-wide directive. So what are some of the key government-wide challenges you've outlined?
Well, for this key government-wide challenge, again, we could identify many challenges, but we just wanted to highlight just one very important one, which is the updating federal policies and rules, as we discussed earlier. Using social media-based public engagement requires government agencies to resolve legal, contractual, procurement, and policy issues associated with the use of social media applications. As we mentioned before, many practices and requirements of third-party social media tools like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and others are not consistent or oftentimes incompatible with the existing government policies and rules. Therefore, we believe that government should be open-minded to accept those social media technologies by updating their policies and rules. And if you can achieve that, then those challenges could be well overcome.
Great. So your report also has a is chock full of recommendations directed at federal agencies who are implementing open government initiatives, some 15 recommendations. Why do you recommend, and I want to focus in on one particular or a couple of particular recommendations that I think are really critical. Why do you recommend agencies use a phased-in approach that follows a more democratic bottom-up approach to implementation?
Well, we found that some federal agencies have very overly ambitious or aggressive plans for open government implementation. But trying to simultaneously implement so many initiatives that belong to different stages in our implementation model will likely result in a slower pace and lack of resources and waning public interest. And it may also lead to a government employee burnout, if you will, and maintenance problems down the road. So a strictly top-down approach is not going to be effective for implementing social media-based applications that require voluntary efforts on the part of government employees as well as the public. So in the spirit of the open government vision, agencies should take a more democratic, consensus-based approach as opposed to a strictly top-down or command-and-control approach. So they should engage government employees and the public from the very beginning of the whole process by soliciting their input and suggestions.
So you also have recommendations around securing resources and prioritizing efforts. What are your recommendations, and how can agencies get the biggest bang for their buck?
Well, although many social media services and tools, as you know, they are available free of charge. You know, you don't pay for Facebook, you don't pay for Twitter. But social media-based public engagement initiatives nonetheless require substantial investment in terms of human resources, time commitment, and network infrastructure. Allocating dedicated personnel to specific initiatives is necessary to ensure continuous monitoring and maintenance of your public engagement programs. Agencies should not take resource constraints lightly and must clearly state in their open government plans ways to secure necessary resources to pursue their open government initiatives. To get the biggest bang for their buck, well, government agencies should start with high-value, high-impact data tools and applications and focus on strengthening what is working for them rather than spending too much time and energy on what is not working for them. It is important that government agencies try not to publish all the data, all the tools, and all the applications all at once. Instead, they should adhere to the 80-20 rule, especially in early stages of open government implementation. In other words, they need to identify 10-20% of highest value data and tools and focus on making those data and tools available to the public. And since the social media-based public engagement is a radical innovation in terms of technological novelty as well as cultural gaps, I would say agencies should not overburden or distract their employees by launching projects that will deliver only marginal business or public value.
So what are your key recommendations around leveraging technology?
I'd like to point out a couple of things here. As an increasing number of open government initiatives are launched over time, the sheer complexity of managing all those initiatives will increase significantly as well. So if not managed well, this complexity could become the major obstacle to sustaining open government initiatives. So agencies need to develop high-level enterprise architecture in order to manage complexity in the early stages of open government implementation. And based upon their enterprise architecture laid out, they need to standardize and simplify data, tools, systems, and processes wherever possible. And in addition, agencies should integrate their engagement tools and applications seamlessly so that users can easily navigate various services and programs and do not have to keep logging in and out.
So I wanted to ask a question regarding the applicability of your model and your research. You're both from a school of business. You referenced earlier on the private sector vis-a-vis the federal sector's progress. To what extent is your model applicable to other levels of government beyond the federal government? And more particularly, is it applicable to the private sector as a whole?
Yes. When we first started this research, because of our location being in the D.C., we wanted to focus particularly on the federal side. But this once we completed this research, this whole open implementation model could be easily applied to state, municipal or local government agencies without major applications. And beyond that, also in the, this could also be applied to the private sector as well, whose companies or organizations that have not yet started the open government or open collaboration plans, that they could also work on that. Let me give you an example. Lately, those state and municipal government, if you look at those websites, they have been actively, in fact, engaging in open government initiatives. The case study that we provide was for the Health and Human Services in the federal government. But you would be very surprised that, for example, various state-level Department of Transportation, they have also been actively implementing open government initiatives. And we believe that many other state-level agencies can greatly benefit from this model. That's one example, but also the municipal or city level, that this model could be greatly applied as well.
Well, I want to transition to the future, and I want to ask you folks to prognosticate on what the future looks like in the area of open government implementations. What are